Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman, a special late Friday night, early Saturday episode for you, but I am very excited about this one for multiple reasons. I do want to remind you, you can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSEC, the podcast, anywhere where it's available, Stitcher, Spotify, the podcast app on your phone. But the reason I'm excited is because of the guests that I have on the show. Now, normally with guests, I love any time that I get to talk with someone who's passionate about the same things that I'm passionate about. But more so in this case, it's a good friend of mine. And his name is John Glosser. And he writes for Dynasty Nerds when it comes to Dynasty football. He also has his own blog site called Injured Reserves. But the reason why he's on this show is he's a very intelligent basketball mind. And he is a huge, huge sports fan of the Syracuse Orange Men. And we'll get to why that's relevant in just a second. John, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for that great introduction.
Not a problem at all, man. I mean, every word of it, like I say, I told you I've been looking forward to this for a while. I'm glad we were able to finally make it happen. So why is it that we're bringing in John Glosser? Well, the reason why that is because, again, he is a huge, huge fan of the Syracuse Orange Men, and it just so happens that, in my opinion, one of the most logical fits for the Grizzlies in this upcoming draft and one of the most intriguing prospects that are out there in this draft for what the Grizzlies are likely looking for is Elijah Hughes, a guard slash wing that played for Syracuse for the past 2 years. So, John, let's jump right into it. So when it comes to Elijah Hughes, the thing about it is that he's been at Syracuse for 2 years, transferred a couple of years ago, but you've watched these games. You watch these games intently every time that he plays. Let us know a little bit about Elijah Hughes. What stands out about him when you see him play for the Orangemen?
I think the one thing you get a read on from Elijah Hughes when you watch him right away is obviously the size of him. He is a the prototype size for the NBA. Although he did play forward mostly, he's typically the size of a two guard. But one thing with Hughes that you kind of see is his ability as a defender. I know that gets lost a lot in the 2-3 zone that Syracuse plays, and kind of the knock on it from a lot of NBA analysts or basketball enthusiasts, you should say. A knockdown shooter, a guy who is a very good spot-up shooter, and a guy who can defend well, things that translate to the next level, the NBA, very well. I think that he has NBA-level three-point range. I think that he is not elite at anything other than maybe being a long-distance shooter, but he's pretty good at everything, in my opinion. I think the only knock you would have on him is maybe his ball handling. But very, very tough kid, very smart kid, and really excited to see where he goes in the NBA draft.
And, John, the thing that I'll say that kind of stands out about Elijah Hughes when you watch some of his film and when you start looking at some of the statistics, you mentioned the spot-up shooting and the distance shooting. Well, another factor in his game that you also kind of notice is the mid-range shooting as well. But the big thing is all of those things is the innate quality that a lot of NBA teams want to see, especially in these prospects that are later on in the draft, and that is self-sufficient scoring. And that's something that Elijah Hughes did. Not only did he have a lot of repetition in isolation-type plays, he succeeded quite often, not necessarily getting to the basket that much, but more in his ability to create space and get his own shot off. Watching those Syracuse games, was there a lot of confidence with the ball in his hands that he was going to find the shot that made sense?
Yeah, of course. A transition year going through with Tyus Battle leaving and Elijah Hughes getting to play 1 year with him. But then with Battle graduating, it would then Elijah Hughes was the best scorer in terms of a one-on-one playmaker. Syracuse runs a lot of dribble handoff stuff, a lot of things where the point guard is supposed to make a lot of the plays. Frank Howard took a ginormous step back last year, and Elijah Hughes really did step up. Although he's not thought of as a ball handler, he did have his best assist per game last year, as well as he led the ACC in scoring. I don't think that's anything to shake your head at. very, very good basketball conference. And he was second in three-pointers made in the conference to only his teammate, Buddy Boeheim, who is a knockdown shooter himself. So I think you hit it spot on with the ability to create his own shot, which is something that is huge at the next level as well as in college. But, yeah, Hughes definitely is a player that I don't want to say he's a walking bucket, but he can score and he can be relied on to score. And he's pretty close to an elite shot maker. I think that he can get there. So I'm very, very happy that you kind of brought him up on the podcast and that you're talking about him because, you know, it's great to see, you know, once you come into Syracuse, you're part of the Syracuse family. So it's great to see guys like him hyped up. And I know he's been rising up a few draft mock draft boards with the draft so close. So it's very cool to see.
And John, the other thing that I'll say before we, you know, head into our second segment is that, you know, another thing that you kind of hinted at in that answer, but I think that also kind of stood out a little bit, was that Hughes took on a little bit of a floor general type role. I mean, I don't necessarily want to say that he was, you know, the main point guard, but when you looked at it, there were some plays in which, you know, if the isolation play was not there, you know, he could, you know, run plays. That's something that I will ask, though, is for someone who did avidly watch him on a consistent basis. So when he's in these isolation type setups, did you see the ability to where if he's trying to run his own play or find his own shot, if it wasn't there, he would pass out of it? Did he mostly force his own shots? Or was he someone who, well, we'll start off with that. When it comes to his decision-making, with being able to find his own shot, you know, did you feel that he forced some shot at times, or did you feel pretty good about his ability to recognize that if the play was not there, he could find an open man for a good look?
I think the role of him being a playmaker for others kind of was something that was forced on him a little bit. Joe Girard III is our young point guard who was coming in, one of the best New York basketball point guards ever. So he was kind of learning the role, supposed to be behind Frank Howard. Frank Howard was injured and suspended and just not playing well. So Hughes was looked at in the Tyus Battle role, which was looked at in the CJ Fair role. If you guys remember Syracuse basketball, it's one guy who's going to get most of the shots, especially from the guard forward position. So I think Elijah's decision-making was something that was kind of thrown on him that he wasn't really totally prepared for, especially in the ACC. I mean, I will say in terms of one-on-one and getting his own shot, there's no doubt about it. He struggles against longer wings and guys with elite level foot speed, which pretty much everyone in the NBA has at that position. So I think those are things that are normal that he would struggle with in college, playing against the Dukes and the North Carolinas and the Blue Bloods of the you know, NCAA and ACC. So, but he's definitely a guy who can get other shots, especially with such a young team. It was really nice to see him trust guys down the stretch, especially in the ACC tournament when they kind of seemed to be playing their best basketball before, you know, the tournament was inevitably canceled and all that. But yeah, he definitely can get his own shot as well as trust others and make plays for others.
And that's the thing. It seems like that though it was forced on him, he averaged 3.4 assists, 2.3 turnovers, maybe not the most ideal assist to turnover ratio, but they're enough to kind of, you know, give you faith that in a pinch he can certainly provide good value. Coming up, we're going to look a bit deeper into, you know, the struggles that are out there when it comes to Elijah Hughes' game. We know he can score. We know that he can shoot, and we know that he can create his own shot. But what are some areas of his game that he may struggle with in the NBA? And is there any encouraging signs that from watching him play that shows he may be able to shore up some of those weaknesses? Coming up, we'll talk more with John Glosser about Elijah Hughes. It's that exciting time of year again where anything and everything is bound to happen and happen quickly, and that obviously is the NBA offseason, and we've got you covered here on the Locked On Podcast Network. The NBA draft is days away, and the Locked On NBA podcast show is mock drafting every first-round pick. Listen to the Locked On NBA podcast every day leading up to the draft to hear projections of each pick and expert analysis from Chad Ford, The Athletic's John Hollinger, and Sports Illustrated's Jeremy Wu. Check the feed to catch up on past shows, and don't miss a pick. Subscribe to Locked On NBA today wherever you get your podcasts. Each one of us would love to add healthy benefits to our day, and a lot of times it takes a lot more effort than we had anticipated, but I have a suggestion that could probably not take much effort at all and could add a lot of benefit to your day, and that is Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. It legitimately is a great tasting option, a great tasting snack, breakfast, before or after workout meal that you can enjoy listening to your favorite podcast network episode. It also is something that you can have in the flavor that you enjoy it. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now, you can choose from a wide assortment of flavors. It's very likely that a taste that you like will be there. And also, if you go to BuiltBar.com right now and you put in the promo code Locked On, you'll get 20% off your next order of Built Bar. That's 20% off your next order from BuiltBar.com. But I can tell you this with confidence: if you add Built Bar to your daily routine, I feel like it's going to be a mainstay for years to come. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, put in the promo code Locked On, and get 20% off your next order of Built Bar. Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. We do want to remind you, next week we've got some exciting guests coming up. A familiar name will be with us. Mr. Chip Williams will actually be with us this upcoming week, a favorite draft mind here on Locked On Grizzlies. He's been covering the Grizzlies for quite a while, the draft for many years as well. Really looking forward to him. He'll be with us next week talking exclusively about the NBA draft coming up on November 18th. But back with John Glosser. So excited to have him on the show, a good friend of mine, an avid Syracuse basketball fan. We're discussing Elijah Hughes. So, John, the other part of Elijah Hughes' game, we talk about the three levels of scoring, and I mentioned, and you basically validated it, Hughes can find his own shot in mid-range. He shows encouraging signs, from three-point land, especially with his ability to shoot from distance. But a part of his game that kind of has stood out as a weakness is the rim. Shooting at the rim. Not necessarily that he can't get to the rim. I think that he struggles more than people might expect with someone that can get a shot off. But in general, shooting at the rim, it seems like that could be a struggle of his going forward, despite his size for a shooting guard. From someone that's watched him on a consistent basis, do you feel like that's just a part of his game that's still developing? Or do you think that it's a general weakness that's going to take a lot of time? He may just not have that high of a future when it comes to his ability to score at the rim.
Yeah, I feel like the three main issues with Elijah in terms of weaknesses is obviously his dribbling. He's not a good enough dribbler, I think, based on the tape that we have and what I've seen of him, to be like a good pick and roll player or anyone. I think like transition right now is probably spot up shooter, so I think that hurts him. He's definitely not an explosive finisher, to your point. I think that our shooters, are great shooters. We're in this Steph Curry era right now, which it's, if you're not shooting a long range three, you kind of want to cook someone off the dribble and throw it high off the glass. You're not looking to dunk it or make a highlight play. But it would be fine if he went to the Grizzlies because you have John Morant for that. So, Elijah Hughes, I think, you've seen him get a shot blocked quite a bit, kind of go up a little weak. That could be coaching, that could be just being in a role that he's unfamiliar with, where he's maybe thought he was going to be relied on as the main shooter, and you bring in guys like Gerard and Buddy Boeheim who can light it up from deep, and you kind of need, you're looking for Elijah Hughes to be that finisher at the rim, and he's just not there yet. It could be a developing thing. I would lean more towards it to a developing and coaching thing, where if you want him to really go after the basket, that would be the next evolution of his game. Whereas a guy who can spot up shoot and light it up from deep could also, dunk on somebody, and all you need is one of those sometimes to give yourself that confidence to go ahead and do it every time you attack the rim.
So another thing with the ball in his hands getting to the rim and finishing, there has been a bit of question about it. But another thing that also kind of, you know, stood out about his game on film, and you have seen multiple, you know, much brighter draft minds than myself. Another thing that they pointed out, though, is that he is a very intelligent cutter, you know, as far as being on the baseline or slasher to the rim, you know, for passes, perhaps as a finisher in transition. That certainly seems to be encouraging. You know, I'll get your thoughts on that, but also to expand on that a little bit, you know, his ability to move off the ball, cutting to the basket, that's certainly a good thing to have as an asset. But do you also think that translates in his ability to move around screens and off the ball to get open for catch and shoot situations? Do you think that he could be a relevant factor in that sense with his off the ball movement, both towards the rim as a slasher, as well as getting open for catch and shoot opportunities in NBA offenses?
Yeah, absolutely. And you also have to remember, you know, the Syracuse offense that is run is not very complex. It's you know what's coming, just can you stop it? The NBA is not the same way. You have some of the brightest minds in coaching, which is why they're coaching in the NBA, not to take anything away from Jim Boeheim. You know, he's a god around Syracuse. So, but a lot of the NBA offenses, you know, are more complex, more, you know, built around cutting and moving without the ball. And we see it sometimes in this era of guys not wanting to move without the ball and kind of wanting to ISO off the dribble. So Elijah Hughes already has that part of his game down, to the point where he's confident enough that he can get his own shot off a step back or, you know, taking someone one-on-one. Being able to move without the ball and do it in a college offense when he's the primary scorer, he knows that he's not going to get open looks. Your best defender on the other team is looking to guard him, and most teams are playing man-to-man, so he's not getting these open looks that he was getting, you know, his sophomore season. And coming back his junior season, he ends up leading the ACC in points while everyone knows he's the guy. So I think that, you know, goes a long way to where he can be at the next level. And I think that's maybe why some of these draft gurus are gushing over him, because he does have a lot of kind of old school NBA, you know, parts of his game, you know, moving without the ball and being able to cut and slash. And like, you know, we mentioned his, you know, his ability to not be the greatest at finishing at the rim, but being able to give himself those looks, and his free throw attempts have went up every single year, all 3 years in college. So I think his ability as a scorer is not something that you should be worried about if you're drafting Isaiah Hughes this year.
And of course, that resourcefulness as a scorer is something that we've talked about. And with Hughes, you are correct. You know, in general, his field goal attempts had, you know, went up from nearly 11 to 14 and a half during his, you know, 2 years at Syracuse. And he shot, you know, over 50% from two-pointers, which is encouraging when you think of just how much of that came from mid-range. And then, of course, while his three-pointers did go down, obviously he took a lot of difficult shots, but his free throws, you know, nearly, you know, doubled, and he actually improved at the free throw line, which is an encouraging sign for someone as a shooter at the NBA level. But let's talk about something that I would like to call the Boeheim-Bermuda Triangle. You referenced it earlier, talking about the 2-3 zone. Now, I know that there's not a lot you can tell about Elijah Hughes, especially in man-to-man opportunities, when it comes to his defensive ability translating to the NBA. But what encouraging things did you see when he was on defense? He averaged 1.2 steals a game. Also, a pretty decent rebounder for his size as a shooting guard slash wing. What other things did you come away, you know, encouraged by when he played defense that you think could allow for him to at least be, you know, reasonable as a defender at the next level?
It's funny because I actually honestly saw Elijah Hughes' basketball IQ more on the defensive end than I did on the offensive end. He's a guy that we read about and heard about and knew he could shoot. This wasn't something that was surprising to Syracuse basketball fans. But one of the hardest things is when you have a newcomer or a young kid coming into a 2-3 zone that is very complex, and there's a very short leash for Jim Boeheim because there's a certain way he wants it played. And if you don't play that way, no matter how good you are, you will be sitting on the bench right next to him while he chews you out. I'm sure most of the country has seen this from time to time. But his ability as a a weak side shot blocker to come over and help is something, and his ability on the glass. Like, he does help on the glass. He is small, relatively small for the forward position in his zone, but his ability to kind of sense the kick out to the shooter coming, you know, we all know that that corner in the zone is kind of where you're going to get a lot of your shots, depending on how you're attacking it. You want to get into the middle and kick it to the outside. A lot of times being able to read that with his length and his basketball IQ, being able to, it's very, very hard in the zone to cover that corner as well as give the threat that you're not going to come into the paint, because he'll be able to at least play help defense. So I think his IQ on the defensive end actually is very, very underrated. And I think in terms of man-to-man, he played at ECU his freshman year before he transferred and was forced to sit out and then play the final 2 years at Syracuse. He played man-to-man there. He only started 7 games, I believe. He was a young kid at the time, but from everything I've read and heard was that he wasn't a bad man-to-man defender. I think people look at him as a good defender. Again, like, you get knocked for playing the zone, but let's not forget, you had zone being played in the Eastern Conference Finals. You had zone being played in the NBA Finals a year ago. So it's not this defense that should be, you know, blackballed completely, because although it's not a defense that NBA teams are playing constantly, it is a defense that teams have gone to from time to time to slow down a shooter, slow down an offense, whatever it may be. Being able to have the ability to play in 2-3 as well as having the foot speed to play man with some NBA coaching, I think that you get yourself a pretty good player. You do want somebody who's versatile on both ends of the floor.
And I think that that's the thing that you talk about when it comes to Elijah Hughes, is that there is versatility. It may be a bit of a mystery when it comes to his ability, you know, to play defense, but it seems like he also has nuances of his game that, you know, that gives him a I want to say more encouraging floor coming into the NBA, but there's parts of his game that you would expect, you know, you'll live with whether or not they develop. But his mid-range shots, his ability to rebound, you know, as a guard, his ability to be an off-ball help defender, you know, at the rim, those type of things, you know, you don't really know if they're ever going to develop with guards, but they're there with Hughes in flashes at the very least. And so there, if those things are already there and there's plenty to work with to develop the main, you know, skill sets that you want to see from him, that's certainly a lot to work with. I talked with him, you know, having a very wide or a very deep bag of tools when it comes to his ability as a player. And so it'll be exciting to see, obviously, at the next level. But speaking of the next level, we talk about it. The NBA, where does Elijah Hughes actually project? You know, we talk all these positive things about him, but, you know, there are reasons why he's a late first, early second round draft pick. Just where might he stick in the NBA, and why does he make sense for the Grizzlies? Coming up, I'll talk to John a little bit more about that as we project where Hughes may fit in an NBA rotation. So, John, we've talked about it. A guy who can be a self-sufficient scorer in a pinch, can be a secondary playmaker, someone who also can add value to an offense potentially off the ball. So you've got a very wide range of potential added value when it comes to offense. You also hope that he will eventually develop into the, you know, where he would not be a liability on defense. He's got some things that works with him there. It seems like Hughes stands out as someone that really could be a part of the rotation, especially, you know, maybe after a year of development or so at the NBA level, but his ceiling certainly seems to be a top of the rotation off the bench or spot starter in the NBA. Is that kind of where you think he may stick as far as, you know, possibly 2 to 4 years from now, when it comes to his trajectory?
Yeah, I like, I've read a lot about, it seems like he's definitely going to the G League, no matter who drafts him. It seems like that would be, that is kind of what someone is depending on for him to develop into, you know, the player that he's going to be. I don't think Elijah Hughes is an all-star type player. I don't think you're ever going to get that out of him. But there's a lot of scorers that come up onto second units that are very, very key role players, like you spoke of. I that's where I see him. Depending on where he goes and where he fits, there's no NBA team that is going to turn down a guy who's a pretty good defender and a elite shot maker. So I think that given the right system, he's going to probably progress a little faster if he's able to be played somewhere where he's given a chance to be a lot more successful instead of buried. Even if he does go to the G League for even say a year, I think the only thing working against Elijah Hughes in this draft in terms of you were talking about, you know, late first, early second, maybe mid second, I think at the very worst is what we're talking about is his age. You know how that goes in the NBA. It's, you know, everybody wants the flashy 19-year-old because, you know, if 2 to 4 years of developing, he's still in his young 20s. But Elijah Hughes is coming from a top Division I basketball program where he led the conference in scoring. So maybe that time in the G League isn't something that is absolutely an absolute positive for him. He may come into a role where a team like the Lakers or a team that is late in the draft that needs a shooter is going to be able to dress this guy and play him and give him a chance, because I think that's all he needs is a chance to prove that he could be part of a team. He has the skill set, as we talked about. So I don't think G League is absolutely necessary no matter what, but every team's looking for shooters and defenders, right? So in the NBA, I think it's a little tough because guys don't fade out of the league as fastly as maybe in the NFL or some of the other sports. So it's a short bench. A lot of times those spots aren't always readily available. But, yeah, I like him where you kind of projected him. I think a spot-up shooter, a guy who can come in and give you good minutes, maybe not every night, but there's nights that he can come in and you know, spark the second unit, start a run, and give the starters some, like, you know, some good rest for them to be able to come back in and close out a game. I don't know that he's ever going to be more than a 12-minute a game type of guy, you know, but who knows? You know what I mean? We'll see. I do like his ceiling, so I think I'm with you on that one.
And it also seems like, you know, for a team like the Grizzlies, that, you know, a couple of things that they do need. They need that self-sufficient scorer, that guy that can create their own shot. I know that we got Dylan Brooks as a guy, and it seems like that could be at times what Elijah Hughes could be. But I also think from kind of the way that you've described him, a team like the Grizzlies that has a Ja Morant, that has a Tyus Jones, even if it took a year or so for Elijah Hughes to really develop in an NBA system, a team that really was set up with good passing ability. We were second in the league in assists, but a team that really was good at being able to pass the basketball, that could help Elijah Hughes develop his game without the ball in his hands. And that really seems to be where, you know, you kind of look and see, okay, how he develops there really stands out is where his ceiling is as an NBA player. But going to a team that needs that self-sufficient scoring but also has good playmakers that can really help him develop his game off the ball, that seems like the most ideal situation for Elijah Hughes to wind up is what I guess I'm hearing you say as far as where you would think he would most ideally land in this draft.
Yeah, for sure. And you got to remember, too, he's also coming from somewhere where it's very, very difficult to get your own shot, where now you're going to a team, potentially a team that passes the ball so well, and you're going to have those open shots. Nobody knows who you are, you know, especially if you're drafted in the late first or somewhere in the second round. He's going to be able to work on his craft and improve those 3-point numbers from college because they're not going to be as contested in the NBA for obvious reasons, and also improve his mid-range game, which is pretty flawless. So I that would be a really good fit for him. I would like to see him in a system that isn't predicated so much on him needing to take someone one-on-one to get a shot. It would be nice to see him be able to spot up from time to time or take someone off the dribble or come off a cut or a down screen and use his quick release to get up and get shots up. That would be ideally where I would like to see him fit, and I think where he will inevitably fit if he lands in the right situation.
Now, let's not, you know, just ignore the fact that, you know, when I talked about him being a late first-round pick, there was one team that you mentioned that you would, you know, that you think he could go to, and that's, of course, your beloved Lakers. We won't rag you too much for that, John. But I do want to get your opinion. As someone, you know, you're not in the Memphis area. You're up in the Northeast. But if I remember correctly, you know, during John's rookie year, I can't remember if you wound up going or not, but we talked about you going to the game in Cleveland. Of course, it was the game where he almost jumped completely over Kevin Love for the dunk. So I can't remember if you witnessed that or not in person. But in general, from a far perspective, someone who enjoys the NBA in general, and you just, you know, I know that, you know, we both love really, really young players, especially with our love for college basketball. Your thoughts on the Grizzlies and especially Ja Morant from afar as a general fan of the NBA?
I did go to that game in Cleveland. I was actually sitting behind the backboard that he almost killed Kevin Love on. But, yeah, it was Ja Morant was a guy, I mean, we talked when you guys drafted him, how much I liked him, how much his explosiveness, how I thought he was a superstar. And that was one of the reasons that inspired me to go to Cleveland. We typically go every year. I like to go to watch a NBA player of my, you know, a visiting NBA player. I'm not a Cleveland fan, but they're the closest to us. Even though I'm in New York, they're a lot closer. Cleveland's a lot closer than New York City. So, plus who wants to see the Knicks play? So I ended up going to see Ja Morant play. Very, very cool experience. I like the Grizzlies. I think they are young and they're being given a chance to kind of grow together. Some really unfortunate injuries, especially late in the year and in the bubble and all that. So I think that the West is tough. You know, you got an off year from the Warriors. You have LeBron and AD with the Lakers. You had the Rockets playing this inspired small ball where they were, you know, beating everyone with. But the West is not anything to be taken lightly, but the Grizzlies are a team that people need to have on their radar. They're not a pushover team. They're very exciting. They have Grayson Allen, who I hate, but other than that, I can root from them from afar unless they're playing the Lakers.
Well, we won't hold that against you. Now, I will say this. I know that this is a basketball podcast. We cover the Grizzlies, talk about the NBA, but I also know that there are general sports fans that are out there. And if you are a general sports fan and you enjoy fantasy football, and you know, we talked about FanDuel, the agreement between FanDuel and the Grizzlies here recently. Of course, everything, you know, fantasy sports in general is a great thing, but especially with fantasy football. I will tell you this. I have played Dynasty with John for quite a few years, played Fantasy with him. I talk with him almost every day about different fantasy perspectives. There are very few, if any, I know everybody has an opinion when it comes to fantasy football. There are very few, if any, more legitimate opinions that I trust more than John Glosser. Your Twitter handle is @Glosser13. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. If you are a fan of fantasy football, especially if it involves defense, dynasty football, this is the guy to follow. Just wonderful perspective. John, before we end, you know, this opportunity to talk with you tonight, where can folks find your work? And do you have anything that you're working on coming up, you know, as we, you know, obviously get further into the football season, you know, going forward, you know, towards the draft?
You'll find all my work over at Dynasty Nerds for now. During the season, try to really buckle down and produce as much content as I can on a weekly basis. It's tough being a very hardcore fantasy football player, dynasty fantasy football player. You're kind of, a lot of your time is put into your own teams and building your own teams and, you know, kind of communicating with your league mates to try to get deals done and things like that. So that's most of my work. You will see some Syracuse follow-ups and breakdowns and reviews during the year on injured reserves. That's pretty much it. We do have some really, really cool stuff at Dynasty Nerds. If people are into fantasy football that listen to your podcast, it would be it's really growing into one of the best dynasty sites out there. The Dynasty GM tool is amazing. Encourage everyone to use it. It's well worth the money. And a lot of cool stuff coming out from everyone. The Devy team there has picked up immensely. Really cool covering a lot of the college guys transferring to the NFL. I'm getting to know these guys before rookie draft season, as we call it, hits. Being able to player profiles, rankings, everything over there. So I really, really encourage you guys to check that out, and appreciate coming on. It was a really good time.
You're more than welcome anytime, and if we wind up getting Hughes, we'll probably have you back on, and obviously we'll talk to John for a future Lakers game. But again, if you're a big fantasy football guy and if you want to learn more about it, follow John. If you want to get more out of your fantasy football game, look into Dynasty. It's something that me and John, you know, it allowed for us to become good friends. It's a very fun hobby as well. But in general, we thank John so much for his insight. Great stuff as far as breaking down Elijah Hughes. Really shows as to why I think he could be one of the most logical, you know, picks for the Grizzlies and could be a huge steal, you know, given, you know, him being picked in the right spot. For John Glosser, my name is Sean Coleman. Thank you so much for listening to us today, and we'll talk to you soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.